The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from Studio West. Joined this morning by Peter Baker, longtime principal White House correspondent for The New York Times. Good morning, Peter. You didn't have to put on a tie. I'm glad you did, but you didn't have to put on a tie.
For you, Hugh, always. How are you doing this morning?
I'm glad to see you. Peter, I want to talk about GarageGate, and I want to start with the obvious question. Do you have any idea what the precipitating event was for the search of the Penn Biden Center?
No, and I think it's one of the real interesting questions here, right? This is 3 years after President Biden left the Penn Biden Center to announce his candidacy for presidency, 2 years after he won the presidency. So what were they doing packing up at that point? And they haven't really given us any kind of answers about that. Who was doing the search exactly, why they were doing it, what precipitated it. And it's one of those questions that seems like it's pretty straightforward, and they ought to be able to answer without compromising an event. They don't want to respond to a lot of questions because they want to compromise investigation. I think people can understand that, but that's a pretty basic question that doesn't seem, that hard to answer, and they haven't done it.
Another basic question that I have not heard asked, but I don't listen to every minute of every White House briefing. Has the president's representative at the podium, whether it's Karine or the admiral, been asked if the president has received a grand jury subpoena in connection with the Hunter Biden grand jury, which might have precipitated this search?
Oh, that's interesting. We have asked repeatedly whether he would agree to talk to the special counsel in this investigation. We had not. I don't think I've heard it connected to the Hunter Biden investigation. But I could see why people would ask the question, but I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know if it has or not. But if a subpoena stick could take him came from the grand jury to the former vice president about documents, that would launch this. It would explain. And this is what really interests me. Do you find it unusual that lawyers were sent to pack up the boxes at the Penn Biden Center?
It does sound a little odd, right? In other words, not clerks, not, low-level aides, but lawyers. And the idea of packing up, for what purpose exactly? They make it out as if it was just routine, fine, but they haven't backed it up with any kind of further elaboration.
Another question, I don't know if it's been asked and answered yet. The Bidens had three homes after the vice presidency, one in Wilmington, one in Rehoboth, and a rental in McLean, which I am told now that they vacated. Has anyone asked if all of the McLean house went to either Wilmington or Rehoboth, or is there a storage facility for material? Because that was a big house. I've seen that house. That was a big house. There was a lot of stuff in it. And you have moved enough times back and forth around the world. You know what happens. Stuff goes into storage facilities, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's been no word of a storage facility. What we were told is the material from the McLean house went to the other other residences. But, they haven't definitively ruled that out either. That's an important question to ask.
Right. And next, you've covered a lot of special counsels and independent counsels. They're different, but they're the same. The world land speed record for a special counsel at that time called an independent counsel is Jacob Stein. He served 6 months. He was appointed to investigate Ed Meese before he became Attorney General Ed Meese, and he wrapped it up in a hurry. And I was the law clerk to the special panel of judges who appointed him. 6 months is the fastest they get done. Does this mean that we have at least 6 months of Robert Hur investigation and Q&A with the press and camped outside of his house like they were for Mueller?
Yeah, I would suspect at least 6 months. You're right. I mean, it hasn't gotten any quicker since the 1980s. I think that the natural forces of physics in Washington is to extend, not to shorten these investigations, because you always want to make sure you've chased down every possible lead. The desire on the part of a special counsel to make sure they haven't forgotten something, left a rock unturned, is pretty powerful. There's not an incentive to be faster, honestly, because that's not the way they're set up. You're right. It's not an independent counsel. Independent counsel had more autonomy. That's one of the reasons why both parties ultimately got rid of it, because they thought Lawrence Walsh and Ken Starr on Iran-Contra and Whitewater went too far, needed some limits, and didn't they want these special counsel to have limits. And there are limits in the sense that Merrick Garland, as the attorney general, does supervise these special counsels. But you're right. I think the natural forces of you know, physics in Washington is to extend, not to shorten them.
Now, the worst thing about special counsels is that they automatically oblige people to lawyer up, and lawyers are expensive. You know, if you go get Abby Lowell or Stan Brand or any of that half dozen of people who know how to do one of these things, and it's a specialty, your legal bills are going to go up to six figures in a hurry, and maybe seven figures. Has anyone asked any member of the White House staff if they've lawyered up in response to this?
I have not heard of anybody yet employing a lawyer, but as you say, they have already questioned a few witnesses even before the appointment of the special counsel. We don't know who those are, all of them, at least. I think one of them was a young woman named Katie Chung, who was executive assistant to the vice president and was, you know, thought to be involved, I suppose, in the packing of the documents. And I have not heard of any of them having a lawyer at this point.
What was your reaction to the Bureau and the DOJ declining to assist the president's lawyers in doing additional searches at the president's house?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'd like to know more about that, and I haven't talked to the DOJ myself on it. I think that they obviously wanted to keep a certain cautious distance, my guess is. That's the implication anyway from the article in the Wall Street Journal, that they did not want – they wanted to be able to, you know, maintain their prosecutorial detachment in effect. It's questionable or interesting because, you know, had they been there, obviously they would have seen circumstances under which documents were found to understand the, you know, the origin of that rather than simply having to take testimony. But they remember they didn't do that in the Mar-a-Lago case either. Until they had executed the search warrant, they were relying on former President Trump's lawyers to do the search for them. They did not participate themselves until they decided that he wasn't fully cooperating. And it may be that they decided that in this case, it wasn't necessary because the President Biden's lawyers had gotten in touch with the archives after they found the first.
So now we come around to the key question, Peter, the lawyer's question. How does a lawyer at the Department of Justice know that President Trump's lawyers are not cooperating, but President Biden's lawyers are, except on the testimony of said lawyers?
Well, I think in the Trump case, and again, I'm not an expert on law. You are. But I think in the Trump case, they had asked for documents that that they were told they were not getting. And there's some indication that there was some testimony that they have from witnesses telling them that there were documents there that had been withheld from the authorities when they came to get them. I don't believe that there is any such testimony, at least what we know of at this point in the Biden case. And we should always caution that there's a lot we don't know and things can change. Facts can change. And that would change our understanding of the events. But I believe that they had, remember, there was talk about a security camera, there was talk about witnesses talking to the authorities in the Mar-a-Lago case. So they may have had more factual predicate for believing that there was lack of cooperation there than we've seen so far, at least in the Biden case.
Have you eyeballed the Penn Biden Center yet and considered whether or not it is, to your eye, a seasoned reporter, more secure than Mar-a-Lago, Rehoboth, or Wilmington? Because those three facilities have got Secret Service. Penn Biden Center, I think, is an office suite. Have you eyeballed it?
It's an office. I have not, no. And it is not, you're right, it's an office suite. And while he was former vice president, I don't believe he had protection, at least for the whole time. My memory is, and I don't know this to be the case, so don't hold me to it, but my memory is a former vice president will have Secret Service protection for a certain short amount of time after leaving office, but not, you know, not in perpetuity anymore. So it probably was not, as you rightly say, protected by Secret Service. It was an office as opposed to Mar-a-Lago, which is a club with members that were coming in and out. You know, I don't know that anybody going in and out of Mar-a-Lago knew to look for documents until this became a story, obviously. So we don't have any indication anybody did anything there to look for documents. But Penn Biden office, it was a private office. I don't know how many people were coming in and out of it all the time. Again, you know, it was used as a launching pad for him for his next political campaign. They moved in right in the beginning of 2018. Beginning of 2019, he officially severed his ties with that sort of so as to begin his campaign. There's so many questions here we don't know. Why were these documents there? What were they going to be used for? What was their level of classification? We keep pushing the White House to answer some of these questions. Some of them may be helpful to them if they were to give us the answers, and some of them may be incriminating. We don't know. but it would help if we got the answers.
Now, you recall during the Trump investigations, Emmett Till, Flood, a whole bunch of lawyers talked to the media. Has President Biden's private counsel talked to you yet, Peter?
Well, they have a spokesperson for the White House counsel who has given, was talking to reporters and gave a conference call earlier this week, as a matter of fact. The private lawyers, I do not believe, have made any public comments other than the statement. There may be reporters who have spoken to them. But the White House counsel has been putting out public statements and giving at least one conference call and otherwise calling reporters. The problem for the White House is at this point is that because there are so few answers that they're providing, that these cop briefings or interactions with reporters haven't satisfied basically any of them, and they haven't answered why they gave misinformation when they first put it out in the first place. Remember, they put out the original statement on Monday of last week saying, yes, there were some documents. It was confirming a media report. They didn't volunteer this. There were documents found on November 2nd. They knew at that time there had been a second batch found on December 20th, but didn't say anything. And later they tried to explain to us that the reason why they didn't want to talk about this for 2 months after the original discoveries, they didn't want to put out information piecemeal. But that's exactly what they ended up doing 3 days after that statement. They put out another statement confirming in response to another media report, not voluntarily, that the second document batch had been found. So they keep getting tripped up like this. And I think Corinne Jean-Pierre at the podium has gotten tripped up a couple times on this, which hasn't helped. And I think that, they have tried to do what Clinton and other administrations have done, which is to separate the communications on this from the main press secretary's office and silo it with the counsel's office. But it has produced right now at this point these televised briefings that have gone pretty badly, I think.
I'll tell you, Peter, you didn't use the term. It's my term. It's a cover up because they won't answer questions. And when questions aren't being answered, it's a cover up. Good luck in getting to the bottom of the precipitating event, because that's the key to me. Why did they start emptying the Penn Biden Center? Peter Baker of the New York Times, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It is, to me, such an obvious question. Why did they start doing this? Did they receive a subpoena? Did the President of the United States receive a subpoena for documents from the grand jury sitting in connection with Hunter Biden? The easy, easy, obvious question. Do the president's private counsel have security clearances? If so, at what level and when were they granted? Why did they carry them forward? Because that would be unusual, not impossible, but unusual. And then what happened to the McLean House documents, files? Anybody who's lived in any house for 4 years knows that if they move part of their Naval Observatory furnishings and files and the then Vice President Biden's furnishing and files out of the McLean House, out of the Naval Observatory where the Vice President lives when in office, to the McLean rental, that doesn't mean they went up to Rehoboth or to Wilmington. There's just so many obvious questions that haven't been answered. I just think maybe the White House media has lost the touch because it's not Donald Trump and therefore they're not that interested.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt from Studio West, joined by former Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent. Good morning, Senator Talent. Good to talk to you. Oh, not hearing you, Senator, so someone's got to turn on something. Kevin McCarthy just
I think you can hear me now.
Got you now.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, thank you. It's okay. We don't care. It's morning. It's early in the morning. Kevin McCarthy just made some news tweeting out, no more proxy voting. effective immediately. Members of Congress have to show up to work if they want their vote to count. Your reaction, Senator?
Absolutely essential, you, because you can't do your job unless you are networking with your colleagues. And you know what, you, the place where you see the colleagues, as I used to call them, is on the House floor during a vote. So if you want to line up somebody's support for a bill, yeah, you can go over to their office. They may or may not be there. You go down to the floor early during a vote. You know, the votes last 15 minutes. You wait for them to come in. You run up and you say hi to them. And the other thing about it, you, is if you're not in Washington, you're not in the middle of everything, you can't do your job. I mean, yeah. It should never have gone on as long as it did, the proxy voting.
Well, good for Speaker McCarthy. Now I would like, without any setup, your reaction to GarageGate, the Biden document story.
You know what, you, my personal takeaway is the chickens are coming home to roost for the Bureau and the DOJ. Their integrity and credibility was hopelessly compromised when they spread falsehoods in order to hurt President Trump during the Mueller investigation and then suppressed the truth when they convinced the social media companies to censor the Biden laptop. And so nobody believes him anymore. And that's true for the blue tribe, too, you. I mean, they'll say they support what they say as long as it helps them politically, but they'll turn on them in a heartbeat. It's a source of great sadness for me. I mean, they're compromised.
I also think the White House press corps has lost the ability to throw a high, hard one, and they're accepting right. A lot of dross. The obvious question is, what was the precipitating event for the search of the Penn Biden Center? And you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer. I think somebody sent him a subpoena from somewhere. There is this grand jury with Hunter Biden. Do you have any speculation why they would begin to search a center 5 years after it opened up?
It's hard to say, particularly without knowing what it is specifically they were searching for. But here again, we have a problem. You're absolutely right. The press should ask that question. But the White House isn't afraid of the press anymore because the press has lost its credibility with the people, right? In other words, you blow off the – you see what I'm saying? This is what happens when people and institutions abandon the norms of impartiality and the standards of the institution. The institution loses its power. But they can start getting it back by asking the right questions.
Now, I'm just going to talk to you as someone who has to move around a lot between Missouri and Washington, D.C., the vice president has to move out of the Naval Observatory in January of 2017. They rent a house in McLean, where Dr. and Mrs. Biden and former vice president and Dr. Biden live. They leave that house. They move into the White House in January 2021. Do you expect that all of the contents of the McLean house went to the White House, or did they go into storage somewhere? Because I'm just asking as a homeowner, do you think they went to Rehoboth or Wilmington?
Yeah, well, my old stuff's in my basement, of course. I mean, it is a problem what you're going to do with it. But you know the sensitivity with which classified information is handled by people in office. So wherever you're putting the stuff, obviously the rule has to be the classified information is treated differently. Okay, we don't take it and put it in a box someplace. Although I agree with Tom Cotton in terms of the threat to national security, what Hillary Clinton did with an active server was 100 times as dangerous as what either Trump or Biden did. The problem here, of course, is they applied one rule to Trump, and now they're applying a different rule to Biden, and everybody can see it. I mean,
and the only explanation, you've got to explain, Teresa, the Clinton server, the Trump documents, the Biden documents. The only thing that explains the three fact patterns is that DOJ and FBI want to help Democrats and hurt Republicans.
Right. And everybody sees that. I mean, the Democrats in the press see this. They're not saying it because they want to. It's tribalism. But they all know it, which means the DOJ and the FBI, as soon as they start doing something that the blue tribe doesn't like, they're going to turn on them. See, this is the chickens coming home to roost, you.
Last question. Have you read this yet this morning in the Washington Post, Inside the White House Document Strategy and Its Pitfalls? It's the spoon-fed account of Team Biden as to what happened. It's a classic of the genre.
The only thing I read in the Post right away is your columns. Well, so I'll get to that later.
I'll have another one out today on the now 17 high schools that sat on the National Merit Scholarships. It's up to 17, Jim.
Yeah, and I wish somebody in our party would start talking about this besides you. I mean,
Glenn
I know
Youngkin
people
is.
Are talking about
yeah. Glenn Youngkin yeah. is, and boy, are parents going to be angry. Jim Talent on Twitter from the Bipartisan Policy Center. Thank you, my friend. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Talent. Follow me to Hour 3 of today's Hugh Hewitt Show. Good morning, America. Hugh Hewitt in Studio West. I am joined by Congresswoman Maria Salazar, who represents Florida's 27th Congressional District, because one Republican had to go to Davos, and it turns out it's Congresswoman Salazar. Good morning, Congresswoman. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Thank you very much for having me. Good to talk to you.
You are an accomplished journalist before you went to the Hill. What, if anything, substantive gets said at Davos?
Well, that's a very good question, and I'm not sure what's the answer, but I do know that there had to be other voices, conservative voices, coming to this place. And they invited me and they invited a couple of other Republicans to express different points of view. You have to be here and to denounce the hypocrisy. And not only that, to say that America is still exceptional and that we're leading, we're not following, and that we are the only power that can defend them from becoming another Ukraine, which let me share with you, that's their number one problem. How can we escape from being another Ukraine? And they know that is the American exceptionalism, us in Congress, giving them the weapons they need to defeat the Russians.
Now, Congresswoman Salazar, I've seen you enough, and welcome for the first time, of which I hope are many, many, many visits to the Hugh Hewitt Show, that you are not shy. You're not shy.
No.
So when you sit in the auditorium and you hear Al Gore and John Kerry and the UN Secretary General and the bashing of productivity and opportunity and freedom, what, I mean, how do you sit on your hands?
No. You tell them that this hypocrisy of environmentalism, number one, there are more private jets in Davos this week than in any other city in Europe. Yeah, really. So they're a bunch of hypocrites. So it's environmentalism is good for other people, but not for them because they need to come in their private jets.
You know, I got invited.
Where is China?
No, I agree.
Where is China? Where's Russia? Where is India? I mean, they are the environmentalist terrorists. And how come no one says anything? You know, those countries are laughing at us. They're profiting from their lack of environmentalist measures. And at the same time, they're destroying the environment. So and I told them, if you believe that changing to paper straws is going to really do anything, or that Joe in the city of Miami that I represent driving his pickup truck and eating a hamburger is really the one destroying the environment, I have news for you. Where is China? Where's India? Where's Russia?
I did play the Bhutan climate negotiator's comments, and she began by saying, you're all privileged to be here. She did not mention China. Has anyone brought up the Chinese Communist Party, Maria Salazar, and the damage they are doing to the Uyghurs, to the Tibetans, to the Hong Kong, and of course, to the environment?
You know, the problem with these people is that they don't want to be confused with the facts.
Huh.
And that is really bad. But, you know, that's why I keep on telling, you know, I have received a lot of criticism for being here. But you know what? We are standing proud. We are Americans. We still have the American exceptionality live and well. And I am the best example of that. Daughter of political refugees who got here 60 years ago, a United States representative for the city of Miami. No other country in the world would have given me the opportunity. And that's why I know that we have serious problems with the economy. We need to be energy independent. We cannot have 40% of the American families suffering because of this inflation created by this administration. So it's time to do something with the economy. And I believe that the way I can contribute to this country is by presenting immigration overhaul and stopping the madness at the border. And that's
so, Congresswoman,
stay here.
But since you're at Davos, put on your old Telemundo hat and describe to people, is it spread over five hotels? Is it 10,000 people? Are you just walking with your credentials in front of you like a Republican? What's the vibe at Davos?
Listen, this is a very good question. You know what's the vibe? Ukraine. Everyone talks about, because, you know, we're next door. This is Switzerland. This is Europe. All they care about is what's going to happen with Ukraine. Are we going to be next? That's the gist of it. The rest is not important. And you see, that's the hypocrisy right there. Who do they look to or look at? The United States. They kept on asking me, is the Republican going to continue voting and giving us weapons? And I know that there's a big controversy within my party, $100 billion to the Ukraine to defend themselves. This war should have never started because Biden did not send the right signals, peace through strength. But now that we're in it, we need to give them the weapons so they can defend themselves and we won't have to go in. That's what I believe. It's painful. Of course it's painful. But it's going to be more painful if we have to involve our military.
And now my last question about Davos. I want to ask you about the House conference. Have you learned anything new from any presentation at the podium in Davos?
I have not, because maybe I have read plenty. And I know what socialism and what the environmentalists and what the woke activists are doing to our society.
Maybe, you know, that's what I guess.
Maybe I have points of reference. I didn't, but some people, but maybe I am ignorant. Maybe I have not been in every single round table, or, you know, you have dozens and dozens of conferences and forums that I have not been physically present. But the vibe, what I capture out of the whole environment or the energy, like you asked me, is Ukraine.
Okay.
Everyone is concerned. And you know what? Like I said, we have the answer. So how are we going to bog down? How are we going to be apologetic or apologize? No, we have to defend who we are and continue being best country on earth.
All right. Now, Congresswoman Salazar, I know you voted for Kevin McCarthy to become speaker. Have you got a committee assignment yet?
Well, yeah, I am in the House Foreign Affairs Committee because, as you know, I represent the city of Miami, which is the ultimate melting pot. And for us, foreign policy is domestic policy, is local policy. We are the, I think that we, the Cuban Americans, the Venezuelans and the Nicaraguans, we are those reminding the rest of the country that socialism is a farce.
So Speaker McCarthy this morning announced that the end of proxy voting is today. So you have to come back to vote in person. Do you support that move? I sure do.
Of course. Of course. And you have to be, you have to vote in person. You have to go to the markups in person. You have to go to the committees in person. Of course, that's why people elected us, for us to be in person defending their interests.
All right. Next question. When the debt limit gets a serious problem, will be June or July, do you think the House conference is going to be able to agree on what to ask for in exchange for raising the debt limit? Because unless the ask gets outlined, repeated, refined, it will be a Democratic field day given their allies in legacy media.
That's a very good question. I have not gotten involved deeply in those conversations yet because, like you said, we just picked us the leader and we only had a week of work. Now, when we go back on the 24th, when session starts again, I'm going to start thinking what the conference is proposing. But I do know two things: that we're spending like a drunkard sailor, and number two, that we have to pay our debts because there's no way that we can stop paying our bills. But at the same time, we cannot have $3 trillion in debt. So something has to go, but we got to continue having the stature and the standing in the financial world of the dollar, that we got to preserve the dollar.
Yeah, I think you meant $33 trillion in debt. That's where we are. Last question, Congresswoman Salazar, do you want Governor DeSantis to run for president?
Oh, you blick. Listen, DeSantis has done a fantastic job. You know, the good thing with Ron is that we ran together in 2018. When neither one of us knew whether we're going to make it or not. And he showed his true colors. He helped me tremendously. So I know the true DeSantis, because at the time he was not governor. He was just another House member and he was fighting for his life. And, you know, he won by 0.2
Right.
Everyone was telling him that he was not going to make it, that Andrew Gillum was going to be the winner. But I know Ron DeSantis very well. He's a man of integrity. And if he decides to run for president, I would be delighted. I do know one thing, that the next president of the United States is going to come from the state of Florida.
Ah.
We got the best candidates.
You got a lot to pick from. That's a very diplomatic answer, Congresswoman. Well, safe travels home from Davos. Do you think you'll go back next year?
Oh, you see, that's a very good question. I'm not sure, but if they were to invite me to one of those big, expensive and populated forums, and I can repeat what I just told you 5 minutes ago, the American exceptionality that we're leading, not following, and that we don't have to apologize for anything. On the contrary, we're still the best around. I will definitely come anywhere to repeat those words.
I am
a product of what the American exceptionality.
I'm very glad we sent you, Congresswoman. I'm glad that if there was one Republican who was going to go, it was you. Thank you for joining me this morning. Safe travel home.
Appreciate it.
On January 19th, it's Thursday, and it's going to be a rocky day in the markets, I think. So rather than wait for the second segment of the show, I'm going to begin with the market report, which is always sponsored by Birch Gold. If you're buying gold today, do it from HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 989898. They'll send you the free information kit on opening up a third-party administered depository for your 401k, your SEP IRA, your Roth IRA, your IRA that uses physical precious metals. Birch Gold. Go to HughGold.com. Now, why the market report early? Yesterday, the Dow dropped 613 points. Oops. S&P down 62, NASDAQ down 138. Gold held steady, actually went up a little bit to 1,909, and the 10-year Treasury dropped down to 3.375, indicating that the recession has really got teeth. Overnight, the story broke that crypto lender Genesis is preparing to file for bankruptcy within days. Crypto lender Genesis Global Trading Inc. is prepared to file for bankruptcy within days, according to people familiar with the matter, write Akiko Mastuda and Jody Zhu Klein in the Wall Street Journal. Genesis, owned by the crypto management conglomerate Digital Currency Group, is in the final stage of preparing paperwork as it files for Chapter 11 protection. The crypto lender has been considering filing for bankruptcy for months. Now it's going through with it. I also mentioned U.S. retail sales fell 1.1% in December. That's usually the strongest shopping month as the recession bites home. How bad is it? Elon Musk's Twitter is auctioning off Kegerators, office supplies, neon bird sign from their San Francisco headquarters. Also, the smartest man in the world, Peter Thiel, closed out his 8-year Bitcoin bent before the crash. So Thiel, who I really do think is one of the smartest people running around the United States, got out of crypto, made an exit. They sold the vast majority of its cryptocurrency portfolio by the end of March of 2022. A little bit ahead there. Also the news, Microsoft cut 10,000 jobs. They announced they are cutting 10,000 jobs. That's on top of Amazon announcing last year that they're cutting 18,000 jobs. We got a recession. And in this recession, we have bad days like that. And then Europe says, whoa, this morning, trading abroad is down. England is off 0.86%. Germany off 1.25%. France down 1.38%. Davos has not cheered everybody up. And the globalists realize that they've really screwed it up this time, and we're going to have a worldwide recession, and it's going to be painful. If you want to be safe, Birch Gold. Go to HughGold.com or text Hugh to 989898. Inside the White House and its document strategy and its pitfalls. This is a classic. In the Washington Post, Matt Dizer, Tyler Page, Carol Yoning, and Yasmin Abutaleb. Now, believe me, they only write what they are told. They aren't making this up. But this is clearly the effort at damage control by the Biden White House to try and get ahead of what increasingly is a disastrous story for them. One of President Biden's personal attorneys entered the luxurious 10-story office building so near the U.S. Capitol that its promoters billed it as a front seat to power. On a Wednesday last November, to begin what seemed a mundane task, clearing out a rarely used office that Biden had occupied after leaving the vice president. The attorney, Pat Moore, went through a large closet and found nothing out of the ordinary, a person familiar with the matter said, speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss an ongoing investigation. Then Moore tackled a smaller closet, finding it stuffed with folders, boxes, and political memorabilia, including documents related to Beau Biden's funeral, drafts of political speeches, boxes of personal books, the person said. So right there, we've got the soft touch. Beau Biden died. We have funeral documents in here. We've got personal books. Just everybody's closet of doom, right, where you put everything that you don't want to deal with. That's it. But next, Moore made a sudden, surprising discovery, a folder with a cover sheet saying it contained secret government documents. Moore immediately called another attorney and notified the White House counsel's office, which in turn contacted the National Archives, according to two people familiar with the matter. So, question is, how did it get there? But if the way they found the classified documents was out of the ordinary, Biden's lawyers were determined to be sticklers for the rules once it had happened. All right. Now, you see what's going on here. Stickler for the rules. They are scared to death of this thing. In the Hill this morning, Biden reelection plans on track despite documents controversy. No, not despite the documents, because of the document. They've got to get it out there sooner than later. They cannot let this twist in the wind. They've got to stop the sharks from circling around President Biden's reelection campaign. They got to go fast before anyone answers anything. You know, a whole bunch of lawyers are now caught up in this. The first question is, why were lawyers at the Penn Biden Center? Why do you send lawyers to clean out a closet? Have you ever done that? If you've got a lawyer out there, have you ever said to your lawyer, I'm moving, please come and move my stuff, come look through my stuff, because I'm a vice president? I mean, I don't think Dick Cheney had lawyers move Dick Cheney. I really don't. And Joe Biden, did he have lawyers move the documents there in 2017? They were there for 4 years. No one ever looked in the closet. No one ever looked in the closet at the Biden Center. I just think this is clearly bothering. My inference from this is that there's something bad here, because the Biden people can't get they can't organize a one car funeral at this point. But let me go through the rest of the news. We'll come back to that. New morning consult poll has former President Trump holding a 17-point lead over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, followed by Mike Pence, Liz Cheney, Nikki Haley, and Ted Cruz. It's worth about what you think it is. My story of the day, and I'm mad about this because it made me rewrite. I only normally do one column for the Washington Post a week, but I felt obliged to do a second column this week because this National Merit Scholarship scandal in what had been Fairfax County, there's a clue, what had been Fairfax County, got bigger yesterday. And I'd finished the column, and I'd gone back and forth with my editor, and it was ready to go into the paper today. And then last night, as I'm wrapping up the night, and I'm looking through the morning news, I see that, remember, it began at Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology. Then it expanded to a total of 3 schools in Fairfax County High School District. Then over the weekend, it became 7 schools, and ta-da! Yesterday, it's revealed 17 is now the number of high schools in Fairfax County, Loudoun County, and Prince William County that have admitted to withholding the awards from students. Many other Fairfax County high schools haven't yet released the results of their reviews. All right, what are we discovering? An analysis by Fairfax County Time reveals that an estimated 75% of the National Merit semifinalists, a notch above commended students, that's where the money is to be a National Merit semifinalist, are of, wait for it, Asian heritage, validating the questions raised in a new civil rights investigation by Virginia Governor Attorney General Jason Meares. In fact, at Marshall High School this fall, 71% of the National Merit semifinalists are minority students. Notably, Governor Youngkin announced he's introducing legislation to make it mandatory for schools to report National Merit awards. The same language is being used by all of the schools. We're up to 17 schools in what is a cover-up and a conspiracy. The conspiracy was to suppress excellence. The cover-up is to deny that they suppressed excellence and then to apologize for having done so and then dummy up. If you are familiar with the statute known as 28 U.S.C. 1983, it is the claim statute for people who have been injured under color of state law in a way that violates their constitutional rights. If you've been discriminated against on the basis of race by a state or local government, you sue under 28 U.S.C. 1983, the individuals responsible for violating your constitutional rights. You sue them individually and for money damages. There is now a class action suit. And if you're the lawyer who's bringing it, call me. 1-800-520-1234. I don't know who's going to bring that lawsuit. It's a winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. 28 U.S.C. 1983. If you're a Virginia lawyer and you've been contacted by one of these parents, call me. If you are an experienced 1983 lawyer in Virginia, you can call me. If you're an experienced 1983 lawyer anywhere, you can call me. There's lots more news, but I must tell you, this is disgusting. It's repulsive, and they're going to pay these kids for all the opportunities they denied them in the name of, quote, equity. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. It's Hugh Hewitt. Hey, everybody. Good morning. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you're getting up a little bit late on the half hour, good morning. You get going. I've got a couple of judicial stories. Israel is Michael Oren is going to join us from Israel after the break because they're melting down there over their high court. The Israeli Supreme Court ruled yesterday that Benjamin Netanyahu must remove from his new government Rabbi Dery, who is a close ally of the prime minister, based upon a prior conviction of tax fraud. Now, that conviction for tax fraud was known when Dery led his coalition, which garnered 400,000 votes in critical Knesset seats. And this ruling comes in the middle of an effort by the new governing coalition, clearly a majority of the country, to limit the reach of the Supreme Court in Israel, which is not a constitutional court. It is, they don't have a constitution. They were formed in 1948, with a basic law, which is the first law they put on the books, and the high court likes to think it's a constitution and act like the Supreme Court dealing with the Constitution of the United States, but it's not, and they can't pretend that it is, and so there's a big meltdown there. In the United States, in the state of New York, Governor Kathy Hochul nominated Justice Hector LaSalle to be the Chief Justice of the New York highest court, and that was turned down in a 10-9 vote. All 10 Democrats voted against it. All the negative votes were Democrats, not left-wing enough. So you know what, whether it's in Israel, whether it's in New York, whether it's in front of the United States Supreme Court, if the Supreme Court is run by leftists and liberals want to keep it that way. And if it's being run for a period of time by centrists or moderates or originalists, they declare the end of democracy. Just a little double standard. Just want to keep you know it. The New York Times also reports that the United States is warming to the idea of helping the Ukraine military target Crimea. Good. Crimea is the source for many of the missile attacks on the part of unoccupied Ukraine. Crimea belongs to Ukraine. And at this, by the time they ever get done deciding this, the war will be over. The U.S. has a new Air Force plane, the F-15EX. Breaks key records as threat against America grows. Look, buy a lot of them, put them everywhere. The Atlanta, if you're lifting on AM 920, Friday night could be a little bit interesting as some bad guys on Twitter shot a Georgia State Patrol trooper yesterday and then went online to call for a night of rage at the Atlanta Forest. I don't know where the Atlanta Forest is. My friend Glenn, stay out of the Atlanta Forest on Friday night. There are some whack jobs running around with guns in Atlanta shooting at cops. You ought to know that. New York Times is suddenly concerned that Trump allies are winning seats on House oversight. Every congressman who is elected represents 750,000 or so Americans, and they get committees. The Freedom Caucus members wanted to be on House oversight. I don't know that that was a good choice or a bad choice, but it was a choice they worked out with the caucus. And so there are a bunch of them on House oversight. We'll see how that goes. A lot of show ponies. You need workhorses. I am mostly concerned with the Select Committee on China, the Gallagher Committee, and the Jordan Committee on the weaponization of the FBI. The membership of both of those committees have not been announced yet. Sister Andre, the world's oldest known person, went to heaven yesterday at the age of 118. She lived in France. She enjoyed a daily bit of wine and chocolate, so she's my kind of gal. She was born Lucille Randon on February 11th, 1904, in New York. Oh, wait. Was she born in New York? No. The year New York opened its first subway. Why would they do that? Why would they put that in there? No, she was born in France in the town of Alais. So she was born in 1904, which is 19 years before my mother was born. And my mother died 25 years ago at the age of 71. So I'm just thinking to myself, 1904 to 1923, not sure I would have signed up for that dance card. That's got a couple of world wars, a couple of depressions, COVID-19, and the Spanish flu. She survived it all. Sister Andre, pray for us. Another Catholic story. Increasingly, Pope Francis is acting like Joe Biden, only like Joe Biden on a bad day. So he decided to go off script yesterday in a meeting with Barcelona seminarians, and he cursed out, quote, delinquent priests who withhold absolution. Now, the Code of Canon Law, according to the Catholic Herald, provides that the faithful receive absolution after they have repudiated the sins they have committed and propose to maintain a sin-free life, which is always, of course, not going to happen, but you've got to make the mental commitment to try. And the Pope said, no, that's not right. And he was using quite a lot of vulgar terms, and he'd gone off script. He said the speech was boring. So what happens when you have an 85-year-old Pope and an 80-year-old president? You try and keep him away from the microphone. Regulators have announced changes to nursing home rating system. Federal regulators said yesterday that they will penalize nursing homes that give residents a false label of schizophrenia, a practice that many facilities have used to skirt restrictions on antipsychotic drugs, which can be especially dangerous for older people. Well, I think that sounds like a pretty good rule. Generally speaking, don't drug your patients. Berlin will not allow exports of its German tanks to Ukraine, no matter if they're coming from Germany or a German ally. North Atlantic Treaty Organization allies have over 2,000 German-made Leopards. Germany said they can't go until the United States provides the Abrams. Britain has said it's going to send 14 Challenger 2, but the Abrams tank is being held up because Colin Call, who Tom Cotton unfortunately did not block from the position of number 3 at the Pentagon, told reporters that the U.S. is not there yet. The Abrams tank is very complicated. It's expensive. It's hard to train on. It has a jet engine. It's not the easiest to maintain. Come on. They don't want you to win. That's Joe Biden's approach to not winning. Do not give them what they need. Give them the Abrams tanks, Dr. Cole. They can learn. If an 18-year-old can drive around a United States tank, a 19-year-old in Ukraine can learn as well. This is very important for Dwayne. What grip strength can tell you about how well you're aging? Generalissimo, I think you're losing your grip. And so I'm just wondering, did you see the story in the Washington Post?
No, I did not.
You are losing your grip, right?
No, I'm not losing my grip.
I thought you were kind of not.
Handy.
Your firm handshake had gotten less so when you lost your 50 pounds.
No, I actually still have a pretty good grip. I can still ride a bike. I can still work on on my truck last night.
You worked on your truck?
I worked on my truck last night.
Did you have a bandana on?
No.
No bandana?
Also,
that's not really truck work.
I didn't have somebody do it for me either.
I don't have a truck. I wouldn't do that either. I don't believe in trucks. Anyway, I want to tell people about Defense Tax Partners, and I want to play some GarageGate. Some of you are in deep trouble with the IRS, and you know it, and you've been in deep trouble for a couple of years, and we have a new sponsor, Defense Tax Partners. That's what they deal with. IRS issues that involve things like liens, garnishes, lots of nasty letters, knocks. Nah, they don't knock on the door anymore. They just send you nasty letters. Defense Tax Partners. Don't deal with the IRS yourself. You don't know what you're going to do. Call 877-933-9411. 877-933-9411. 877-933-9411. DefenseTax.com. Why? Because friends don't let friends call the IRS. Really, have someone who knows what they're doing, free consultation, get it done, then find out if you can go forward and talk to the IRS. What are they saying about Joe Biden's documents. I played you James Clyburn in the last segment, congressman from South Carolina, widely credited with resurrecting Joe Biden's dead campaign for president, much to our collective dismay. And he was on with Neil Cavuto yesterday. And here's what he said. Cut number two.
To begin with, I think all of us are concerned about this. The president has expressed concern about the handling of this as well. I don't think that any one of us believe that he packed up his boxes himself to move out of his office.
Let that stop. What's that defense? It's not my dog. It didn't bite you. Besides, you kicked him first. So we're going to get a multiple levels of defense, and we got it in the Washington Post. I read that story earlier. Ted Cruz went on with Sean Hannity last night, cut number seven.
Ted Cruz, Senator, let's talk about the double standard. You got Hillary Clinton and her problems. I know it's funny, but, I mean, it's sad on the other side. You almost feel sorry for Karine Jean-Pierre if she can't answer. But then you got Joe Biden, and then you got a raid at Mar-a-Lago. I want to talk about the double standard and the lack of equal justice under the law, equal application of our laws.
Well, Sean, this past week has been the worst week for the Biden White House since the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, since the murder of 13 servicemen and women. The White House hasn't had as bad a week as they've had. They've had incompetence. They've had scandal. They've had corruption. They've had dishonesty, and they've had hypocrisy. And all of that has been on display in the past week. You know, when we saw Merrick Garland stand up and appoint a special counsel to investigate Joe Biden, I joked on my podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz, that Merrick Garland was like a hostage video. He was blinking out SOS because he was so unhappy, and he was forced to do it. He had no choice but appoint a special counsel, given the utter hypocrisy in going after Trump. And it was discovered that Biden had classified documents, not in one place, not in two places, not in three places, but four and five. He had him stuck by his Corvette. He had him stuck in a room by the garage. He had him in the Penn Center. He had him in the residence. You got to wonder where Joe Biden didn't have classified documents. And all of his preening about irresponsibility, he's either being dishonest or incompetent. But what's clear is he's sending Karine Jean-Pierre out there to dissemble, to mislead, to say things that are factually false. And day after day, she stands up and says falsehoods from that podium. And I think it's only going to get.
Yeah, Ted Cruz is correct. He goes on to say this about Merrick Garland, cut number eight.
This past week has been the worst week for the Biden White House since the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, since the murder of 13 servicemen and women. The White House hasn't had as bad a week as they've had. They've had incompetence. They've had scandal. They've had corruption. They've had dishonesty, and they've had hypocrisy. And all of that has been on display in the past week. You know, when we saw Merrick Garland stand up and appoint a special counsel to investigate Joe Biden, I joked on my podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz, that Merrick Garland was like a hostage video. He was blinking out SOS because he was.
So I think seven and eight might have been the same cut, but you got to hear it twice, and it makes the important point. They had no choice but to appoint a special counsel, and it's the worst week of this year of the Biden president, of the past 12 months of the Biden presidency. Don't go anywhere, America.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.